everybody. It's Loveline.
Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Drew, board-certified physician, addiction medicine specialist.
Adam, high on nitrous.
Paul Rodriguez is our guest tonight. I had my dental work today.
The guest psychotherapist.
Oh, my God. I had my second tooth pulled today.
Yeah.
I went to the new dentist.
With the pictures?
Pictures of the before and after mouth.
You're high right now or something. What is going on here?
I sense Vicodin.
Oh, my God. Vicodin.
Keep going. I got a shot. We'll get into Paul in just one second, but people can understand my disposition here today.
Well, let me start. Before you even get into it, let me just say, it's like, hey, Adam, we're on the air here. Hey.
I'm here. I said to this guy, I said, look, the last tooth I got pulled, the guy was like, well, what'd he give you? And I was like, nothing. He was like, why not? And I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, well, they got things for that. And I said, do you got things for that? And he said, oh, yes. And I said, well, you're my new dentist then. Mm-hmm. And then we sat down, and I gave my heavyweight speech, Drew. and Paul, you probably appreciate this too. I said, look. You doctors just sort of prescribe, 250 milligrams of Vicodin or this much or one of these or half of these. But people are all different. And if my wife, if I drink chamomile tea and then fart and flap the covers and my wife gets a whiff of it, she passes out immediately.
Yeah, her tolerance is...
She's a lightweight. She has half a Tylenol PM or an eyedropper of NyQuil and she falls over on the kitchen floor. Whereas Drew can tell you,
Adam's a heavyweight.
I am a heavyweight.
I think everybody pretty much knows you need animal tranquilizers.
Right.
You're the kind of person that would need to be shot twice by a dart.
That's what
he mentioned last night. He said he wanted a blowgun in the neck.
I said I want to get darted in the neck in the parking lot. I don't even want to wait till I get up to the dentist's office.
There you go.
And I just wake up slumped over my steering wheel in the car. Dehydrated. It's like
without a kidney.
Without a kidney. Urban legends.
I go to leave, and the parking guy's like, "That's $1,800." I'm like, "What?
You've been here for a month.
I've been here since Friday. You've been here August 22nd." So I said, "Listen, Doc. I know you guys like to err on the side of
caution.
Being conservative caution. And all that. I'm not that guy. Load it up." Yeah. So he's like, okay, take three of these, take two of those, take three of those.
Uh-oh.
Gives them all. I'm like, okay. About a half hour later, he goes, how do you feel? I'm like $1 million. He goes, okay, take another one of these. Just put this one under your tongue. Then he gets the shot out. Gives me the shot in the ass. And you got a good dentist, by the way, when the first syringe that hits you is in the ass.
Yeah,
not in the gum.
Yeah.
And
when they hit bone.
and he's got movies. I picked out Towering Inferno.
Oh.
But I was a little groggy at times.
You don't want to see that at a proctologist's office.
Put Towering Inferno in, and I like that Irwin Allen. And then I just and it's another good. Another sign you got a good dentist is how's this guy going to keep my mouth open when I'm past that? Big old rubber, like one of those doggy newspapers they chew on, just jams it in the side of my mouth. So I'm like, yeah. In the seat for 3 goddamn hours.
Three hours. I had all my wisdom teeth pulled out when I was in the Air Force. And if you're a doctor in any one of the four branches of the military, you probably are at the you're not the top of your class,
Right.
The government paid you to get to give them like 4 years of your life. I think it is 2 years for every year.
I think it's 1-to-1.
1-to-1.
You owe two, and then 1-to-1 thereafter in training or something like that.
And this doctor that pulled my teeth, he was probably not qualified. It was Mengele. He went in. He pulled out my wisdom teeth, and then he said that I had a recessive mastoid.
Uh-oh.
Whatever the hell that was.
It's breast cancer, right? No? So what did he do with it?
He pulled all my four wisdom teeth out and didn't give me anything. Like you, man. Thank God I know some people in the neighborhood who have some strong...
Other doctors.
Well, they're kind of pharmacists themselves.
Do you remember the procedure, Adam?
I had the whole thing done. All I knew is, 3 hours went by in the blink of an eye. And then I got home tonight about 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and I went upstairs to go to bed.
Yeah.
And then my wife woke me up, and it, you know, here's how you know you've been asleep. It's like she's banging on the door. It's 9 o'clock, and I'm like, 9 a.m. That's the way it felt for me. And you know, women, the difference between women and men is women don't want to wake you up. Men want to wake women up. Like, I do this with my wife all the time. It's like, look, you went to bed 11 o'clock at night. It's 9:30 in the morning. You've been sleeping for damn near 12 hours. Come on, it's time to get up. But I'm like, what time is it? And she's like, it was like 9:15. I was like, well, why didn't you wake me up? And she's like, I didn't want, you know, women always do that. I didn't want to wake you up. I'd rather you lose your job.
And this is,
by the way, how come women make bad employees, too?
Yeah.
They go, don't go into work tonight, baby. And I'm like, what do you mean don't go into work? You shouldn't go. You don't look good. You don't look good. You don't feel good. I said, no, I never feel good. Don't go in. I go, what do you mean? I'm going, just call them and tell them you can't. And I realize that's what they would do. This is why they get the 70 cents on the dollar.
Well, you know, I agree with you. At the risk of being a chauvinist pig, I think that there's a reason why they don't get paid as much as men.
And that is
because they don't deserve it.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you very, very truthfully.
Send your mail.
Women cannot rally. This is why. I have friends, and Drew over here is one of them, but I work with other guys. Jimmy's this way, Daniel's this way. If these guys can, for one reason or another, be up until 4:35 in the morning, have a 7 o'clock call, and do a 14-hour day. Now, they're not happy about it, but they knock it off.
Oh, yeah.
Most women, if they're out very late, the alarm rang at 7, they'd get up and say, I can't do it. I'm just going to call in. I'll call in sick. They're probably right, and it's probably what makes them better parents
and live longer.
Better mothers and live longer. But they don't have, it's not like once they're at work, they do less work or anything like that. They don't have that crazy Viking rally gene that guys have. I mean, I've seen Drew go off a 2-hour sleep 3 days in a row.
Yeah.
But my wife could never and would never do that.
Not only that, but I think they're working with different equipment, too. I mean, a woman's body is more complicated. You know, I sit down and I say to myself, if you're walking to a drugstore or any place, you realize it's an amazing amount of products
for women.
That women, you know, like for a guy, basically the fundamentals is a soap,
right?
A toothbrush,
detergent, razor, hemorrhoid cream.
That's it. We're right there, you know. But women have like aisles of stuff, you know. For every square inch of their body, there's a cotton, a swab, an ointment.
I know they got soap. You know, the soap for their feet is different than the face soap,
absolutely,
which is different than the elbow soap.
Right. Yeah.
And I always love it when people get brainwashed by this kind of stuff, and it's like, yeah, I didn't have any shampoo, so I was just washing my face with the soap, so I hit it with the bar soap. Are you
crazy?
You don't wash your head. You have to use the mane and tail soap that they were trying to sell us 5 years ago for the horses. this notion that you need a different type of cleaning product for the skin that covers your entire body, which is the same.
I'm telling you, if it wasn't for companies like Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, these companies have made billions of dollars, I think, on the paranoia, mainly of women, you know, that you have to have like a, you know, the same shampoo that you use on your head. There's no way you can use it on your eyebrow, you know,
right.
Because it's not right, you know.
I always love it, too, when women swear by a certain shampoo. And then about once a year on 2020 or one of these magazine shows, they do one of these things where they rate all the shampoos. And as it turns out, the $13 Pantene bottle, exactly same as the Suave bottle.
Prel, concentrate, yeah.
All right, Adam.
Yes.
I'm realizing that one of the consequences of your being loaded is I'm going to have to corral this show a little bit.
All right.
For our first commercial break now. Very nearly.
Time flies when you're on Vicodin.
Number two. Right. I want to know what he gave you because you're far nicer on this concoction. We're going to have to make sure you take this every night.
Brother, you know, I thought long and hard when I was in that chair about some of the things I said to you in the past. The dentist did tell me something interesting, though. I kept saying I was going to bring up with you.
Yeah.
Although I always just call. I'm never sure what to call you. You know, I always like, I go, I work with a doctor, I always say, or my partner. And he said, the Vicodin doesn't really flip my cookie. People have been talking about Vicodin for a long time. And then a few years ago, I had some hand surgery and I got some Vicodin. And I thought, finally, my day has come. This is going to be great. And the Vicodin didn't do anything for me. As a matter of fact, it made me a little bit euphoric. Not good euphoric, just sort of, it beaked me up a little.
Yeah.
And made me a little sketchy,
agitated.
Little agitated, and didn't put me to sleep. Didn't seem to do too much pain. He said he just read some sort of study where that means maybe I'm depressed. We take depressed people and we give them this stuff.
No, it's alcoholics who give them that. And that's how they behave.
He said depression.
All right, all alcoholics are depressed.
All right, well, I'd rather be an alcoholic then. Thank you, Mandy.
Yes.
You're 30.
Yes.
What's up?
I was just wondering if masturbation was essential for full sexuality. Do you have to masturbate in order to be fully in touch with your sexuality?
No,
I think
that was my only sexuality.
Yeah, you're thinking about this the wrong way. Men do this because they have to, and they just do it because they must.
Well, I think men do it because we have way too much time on our hands.
That's when they do it the most. But there's something has to come out, and if you don't take it out, God can remove it for you.
That's right. It'll back up.
That's right. And women, many, many women do not masturbate and get nothing out of it. If he's trying to encourage you to sort of figure out how your system works so you can have an orgasm, that kind of thing, there's something to that.
Exactly. We've had that discussion many times, and that's what he says, that I need to masturbate in order to be more fully aware of my sexuality and be more comfortable with my body. And it just does not. I've never had an interest in it. I've even tried it a couple of times because he suggested it and because he felt so strongly about it. And it just doesn't do it for me.
See, you're talking to a guy, and from a male's point of view, that's impossible. A male cannot process that. That's not possible. So he's not thinking from your perspective, which is, for you, you need to create intimacy. You need to create a certain kind of moment and feeling. And
I've always been curious, Doc. And this kind of is kind of like what she's asking. I've always been curious if women think of the same things when they masturbate that men do.
They do not look at anything.
Right.
Men are very visual and have to see something.
That, yeah.
Women generally close their eyes.
Right.
They are thinking of a feeling state rather than a visual. Tactile
and
experience. There was,
and even in their erotic dreams, they're like, a man came into my room and he made love to me, but he had no face.
Yeah.
Really? You don't want to pick James Brolin or something? No, he had no face. No face.
Yeah.
Like, they don't get real specific.
Yeah.
I understand that kind of
thing. You know, it's weird because I remember at 9 or 10, I guess that's the age when I began to masturbate. I don't know if it's normal.
No, mental note, Adam.
In Mexico, it's considered a little late.
Is it? Thanks for telling me about my culture, Adam.
Well, yes, I know.
But I remember I didn't associate it with sex. I used to think of Hot Wheels. I used to think of a car or a toy.
Adam does that to this
Something
day.
Something pleasant, you know? Yeah, I didn't associate it with a woman.
No, that would be normal.
No, it'd be like
before puberty. At puberty, it's sort of the biology turns it in such a way that now it's directed at
female. Well, thank God. Now I know
Paul was like, oh, the silhouette. Oh, oh, God, I gotta get that one.
I got it on the rims.
Hey, Mandy?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Are you not having orgasms, Mandy? Is that the problem?
What's that?
Are you not having orgasms?
No, I do. My libido is just not as
all right. high. All right, well, all right, Mandy, that has nothing to do with masturbation. Are you on any medication?
No, just birth control.
And what kind of pill are you on?
Ortho-tricycline.
Okay, some pills will shut you down sexually. Some will actually give you some libido, but some will take you the other direction. So
I actually asked my gynecologist that, and I also asked him to check a testosterone level.
No. You got to try.
He blew me off on both.
Well, you should try. You should try different pills, though. Generally, in general trends, most women are sort of shut down by the progesterone content of pills. Because women are so very, very different, some are kind of increased. They have higher sexuality with the progesterone components.
It's always, speaking of the pills, I was talking to my dentist when he was trying to figure out.
All you can talk about is your dentist. Your dentist and the drugs.
It's always funny when you give him a little window into your life. He's like, have you ever been prescribed Valium before? And I'm like, well, no, but I mean, I've taken them. And he's like, well, which ones did you take? The red, or you remember the blue or the yellow? And I'm like, I don't know. I was on this bus with this dude. We were coming back. We were doing a man show bit. We're coming back from Lake Havasu. I don't remember what. But then he tried to backpedal a little more. Like, I needed it though. You know, really, I tried Valium because some guy found one in his car seat, Matt, over at the man show.
Doc, I wanted to ask you, for example, you know, the pill effects, and obviously men don't take a pill. I was watching perhaps the most useless invention the other day. They have the equivalent of a female Viagra pill, right, that's being advertised right now.
Well, Viagra is being studied on women.
No, but have you? I'm sure you've seen the commercials, right? There's a woman in her early 50s, attractive lady who goes, you know, now there's a pill for us, you know, to increase our.
I think this is Viagra.
It's not Viagra.
They probably put a different name on it.
They call it something else.
Yeah, I mean, like the Prozac now is being, you know, remarketed as like Happy Femme.
So yeah, I think I had one of them too.
Femheart or Femme. I forget the name of it, but it's Prozac, and it's for premenstrual.
You know, you got to give me your dentist's address.
Guy's great. You know what I got?
First time you said nice things about a dentist ever.
I got the equivalent of, you know, the bartenders, they have that pouring tray. And at the end of the night, there's a little tequila, and there's a little Jägermeister, gin. I got the equivalent of that, just holding
a little cocktail. They brewed up for you,
and the shot in the ass too.
You won't even remember that you came in here tonight.
Fantastic. All right,
where are you, Adam?
Anyway, so in terms of raising libido in women, it's a pretty complicated issue, but Viagra is being studied in women, and it does have some effect.
And if that doesn't work, I would suggest a 2-carat diamond. That has the same effect on women as a pill.
Yeah. But they eat it. You got to use one of those calendar things to get it out of
to strain it.
Yeah. Marie?
Yes.
You're 25?
26, yeah.
26.
She's been waiting a long time to get on.
What's up, baby doll?
Well, I'm having problems in that I want to have sex, and I feel like I'm ready to get in there and do it, and then I get there, and I just freeze up, and it's like the Sahara, and I don't know what to do about it.
Are you a virgin?
No, I have 3 kids.
I understand. How did this start happening? When did it start happening?
Well, I had a really abusive ex-husband. And I went through quite a bit of therapy for a lot of flashbacks and some different things. And
Before you were abused by your husband, had you been abused by your father?
No, my dad's one of the best men in the world.
Where was the earlier abuse before that?
My mom was a little wacky. I never had any physical abuse. My mom, but nothing physical ever before my ex-husband.
Was there emotional abuse?
Yeah, my mom... honestly, my brother's been diagnosed with bipolar and a few other things, and I'm pretty sure I know where it came from.
All right.
Well, who's the guy you're with now?
My husband. I got remarried.
And you've never had sex with him?
Yeah, I have sex with him. I'm just having a problem actually loosening up and getting into it.
Did I read into what you said? Are you talking about moisture? Are you talking about the Sahara? Are you talking about you vaginally, you're dry?
Yeah. I have that problem, and I have a problem actually just mentally letting go and enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I did not have that problem before my ex-husband.
Well, God knows I don't have the education the doctor does, but can you ever think back to a time or a person or a place where you had enjoyable sex, and you can figure out what is it about that time that was enjoyable and maybe transplant those feelings?
I have tried that, and honestly, my ex-husband, when I didn't want to have sex, he took it whether I wanted to give it or not. And I don't know if some of that is coming back and keeping me front. I just don't know. And my therapist didn't do a whole lot of sex therapy, and I've never really heard good things about an actual sex therapist. I'm a little leery of.
All right. Hold on a second. You may not need a sex therapist.
You just
need a therapist.
Right.
Therapist.
Right.
And the fact that you brought up your ex 4 or 5 times already in this short call says there's still a lot of energy there.
Right.
And how long has it been since you're with your ex?
It's been almost 5 years.
Well, it's a very complex situation, and I'm going to talk about it in terms that may or not entirely specifically apply to you. But when you're in these relationships that are abusive, the reunions, you know, when he's suddenly caretaking and loving towards you, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did you have those sort of idealized reunions where things were wonderful and great, and then it suddenly would break down again, and then you'd be resurrected again in these highly intensive reuniting experiences?
When we were married, yeah. The highs and lows like that.
Right. Okay. The experience of being in the abuse increases your attachment needs, your needs to be with him, and then when he gratifies that, it becomes sort of an idealizing kind of an experience that it's hard to let go of. Also, you sort of have a sense of love relationships as being abusive. In addition, you probably have disavowed aspects of yourself and your sexuality that you can only experience when you're with an abusive guy. You don't like those parts of yourself or those parts of yourself that you haven't fully integrated yet. And yet, when you're with somebody who sort of identifies for you those negative parts of yourself, you can feel sexual. You can feel those kinds of feelings. On the other hand, with somebody that you can be truly vulnerable with and truly intimate with, that's too much. And you can't get in touch with those disavowed aspects of self. So really, it sounds
true. You're really harsh in my mouth.
I know. But it's good. It takes you know what's cool? It takes you about an extra 3 minutes to respond to awaken.
But it's like I was peeking when I came in here, and I was having a good time with Paul.
So Marie, the bottom line is you need more work, more therapy. It seems to me, because you're having trouble experiencing real intimacy.
Ultimately, Marie, I believe there are there are situations where women put themselves into, whereas, it's the old syndrome that, women say they want a nice guy, but that's not who they really go out with.
Well, it's because,
yes.
Again, it's when they're younger, they do a lot of that.
Right.
Until
right.
they find out a-holes don't work for them.
Yeah,
the
right,
ones that keep going with the a-holes have parts of themselves that they can only experience through being with these guys.
You know, maybe you have a great guy right now, and I think you're both are cheating each other out of having a very fulfilling sex life. I think you need, from my opinion, which is worth 2 cents maybe, I think you have to make your partner aware of your feelings, and then, he has to go that extra mile and
make you feel comfortable.
Yeah, get comfortable. Yeah. And if just lubrication is a problem, that is no problem at all, because, get yourself a water wiggle.
If you die in one of these procedures, Adam, I know who I'm bringing in here to replace you. It's all these dental procedures. It happens once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, but when I get home, it's kind of going down in my head as Paul Reiser.
You're wrong.
Paul Rodriguez in tonight. He is going to be at the Universal Amphitheater this Saturday on the 15th performing. That is out here in Southern California. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Paul Rodriguez is our guest tonight. Paul can be found at the Universal Amphitheater coming up this Saturday.
Also at any Home Depot. I'm out in front with a lot of people there.
A sandwich board walking around? Or?
Yeah, well, I stand in front of a Home Depot, and I.
Oh, you're waiting for work.
Day labor.
Pickup truck pulls up. He jumps in the back.
Oh, right.
House-to-house comedy.
All right. Adam,
Drew, you've never actually picked up day laborers. I've done
it before. You have. I know you have a lot.
It's tough because there's 25 smiling faces there.
Yeah.
And it really become like one of the guards at the German death camps, which is
that's like Sophie's Choice.
Yeah.
You decide who eats and who doesn't.
Well, it's sort of like I see the old guy over there missing the teeth, and I feel sorry for him. On the other hand,
he's not going to be able to pick up that refrigerator.
Yeah,
the drywall's being humped upstairs.
I need someone to hump these 5-gallon buckets full of sand up to the dumpster, and he don't look like he's going to make it. Although he looks like he has 10 kids and needs to work.
You can't be sympathetic in a situation like this.
Right. And it's funny. So you'll go like, you, and you, and then you turn around and look, there's 26 guys in the back of your truck. And now it's really painful because it's like, I got to dig you. And then I just treat it like one of those wrestling cage matches. Like the last three guys standing in the bed of my truck are staying. And guys throwing guys off, fighting. Guys, you know, hitting each other with folding chairs and dropping off the turnbuckles.
Yeah, it's a scene from the movie Jackass.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than kicking one out of the truck.
Especially when they go, please, señor, please. Please, I need the money.
No, they know how to do everything. It's great. It's right. You could be, Paul, you be the guy. I'm like, do you have any experience drywalling? Do you know drywall at all?
See, of course.
drywall and masonry?
See.
How about framing, rough framer? What about piano tuning?
Sure.
And nuclear fusion?
Absolutely. I did that in my last job.
And child psychology. I got a 13-year-old that's a little out of hand. You think you can talk to her?
Absolutely. You know what's amazing? Like, I'd be driving by from my house. When I used to live in Santa Monica, and I live in the valley, from my house, I drive by that part of Beverly Hills right around 5 o'clock. You see, obviously, the maids and the ladies that clean the homes for the well-to-do. And you realize that these very well-to-do kids are being raised by some woman named Consuelo from El Salvador, and their first language is actually Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, there's
actually a play, I think it was in Los Angeles, about addressing the plight of those women because they leave their families behind to help raise somebody else's family.
You know, yeah. Well, you there's this park. I don't know what the name of the park is, but I go down there and you see, you know, Consuelo, Pancha, Concha, and with blonde, blue-eyed kids pushing them around. And you realize that for example, I had a manager who both his sons surprised me because they spoke great Spanish. And I went, my God, were you educated in Sevilla and Spain? No, our maid, she's from Nicaragua.
Yeah.
And they spoke great Spanish.
No, most people here in the Los Angeles area who make over X amount a year, who both parents work, are raised by some sort of Latino, keeper award.
You know, my parents didn't make that kind of money, but I feel privileged because I was raised by a Latino woman. So I felt wealthy. You know?
Well, being a carpenter my whole life, I was able to work with these folks. And turns out, I have many stories for you, Paul, but your people like to eat cactus, I found
we
out.
We do. Yeah. Nopales.
Yeah, I was...
Nopales?
Nopales, that's what they call nopal.
I was traveling with one of my buddies when we were installing closets at a Burbank some years ago. It was me and a guy named Pogi and another guy named Philip or something. And he was very I'll tell you, the Mexicans are they're poor, but they're proud. Mm-hmm. It's probably because they're drunk, but they're
true.
Proud. They're proud people.
Think of us as brown Irishmen.
They buy the tortilla in like the 700 chub packs, 18 cents, 700 tortillas, a stack. It comes in a stack the size of one of those logs that you buy, one of those long burning logs.
Fire log.
And they just deal them out all over the van, you know, like you're playing seven card stud.
You know my people well, Adam.
And the guys make all their wives cook for them. And the guy's bringing some stuff, and it looks like chili con carne or something, and he's dumping it on the tortilla, and he's handing it to me, and I'm eating it while we're driving the van. And yes. I said, Philippe, what kind of meat is this? It's interesting. It's not quite chicken. And he said, it's cactus. And I said, I was trying to be open-minded. And I said, cactus? Huh. I never seen that at the stores.
Cactus. Now, don't go out. Anybody listen to us, don't go out and just think that any cactus
can eat. Wait a minute. Wait.
I said, where do you buy this cactus? And he goes, no. And he points at the mountain behind us. We're in Burbank. And he sends his wife up the hill with a machete. Yeah, that was bad.
But, you know, I remember one of the breakfasts that I enjoyed a lot as a kid was cactus and egg. What you do is that there's a certain kind of cactus called floral, which is the the tender shoot of the cactus right before it hardens. Huh. You clean it and then you boil it because it's very slimy. Mm-hmm. You right. boil it several times and then you cut it, and it's surprising. It's like Mexican tofu, man.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I was thinking it is Mexican tofu because it doesn't have much texture to it.
But
like
but it'll absorb whatever. But
it absorbs whatever you put in it. Which, ironically, for the Mexicans, it's just lard.
That's right. You know, I always laugh when they say, you know, this dietetic Mexican. You know, there is no such thing as diet Mexican food.
Yes.
Our food is hearty. It's fattening. It's just very delicious, but it's just really not good for you.
No.
It's not good for you.
Maybe I'll do the Volvo experiment with Paul.
Oh, you mean saying...
Yes.
Well... my barber's from Spain, and he told me one day he was going to trade in his bobo. he wanted to trade his bobo for a Saab. And I said, "You mean Volvo and Saab?" And he said, "Yes, that's what I say. I say, trade the Bobo in, get the Saab." I said, "No, wait a minute. You got the B and you got the V. You just got them in the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah.
Volvo, Bobo, Volvo,
you know,
Bobo, Saab,
Bobo.
Saab.
Actually, it's a double entendre because Bobo in Spanish means fool."
Oh, really?
Bobo. Bobo means, you know, you're a bobo, you're a fool. You know, I read this in
Lowrider?
Yeah, that's the Bible of the Vario. But remember the Chevy Nova? Their biggest problem in South America advertising, that nobody took the time to understand that
Nova
means won't go.
Wow.
And that's really?
In Spanish, Nova. You know, va is the verb of go, no va. So for a long time, it was very hard for them to sell this car because who's going to buy a car that won't go?
But Paul, can you say Volvo and Saab?
Well, I can because,
let's
you know.
Hear it. Let's hear it.
Well, I'll tell you, Adam, I love the Volvo and the Saab.
Ah, yeah. All
the
right.
Saab, the Sahib.
All right, I'm just glad you can do it.
It's a great Norwegian car. You know you're married and you're in a serious relationship if you have a Volvo. Isn't that right, Dad?
Right.
That's a criteria. Yeah.
I had to have my barber eventually put a pencil across his mouth. He'd go like, and he could say, Volvo. He could say Volvo if he put a number two pencil in his mouth. And, you know, an hour and a half later, I got my hair cut. It's perfect. All right, let's... let's talk to Jody. Jody, you're 31.
Well, actually, Drew, or Adam.
Yeah.
This is her husband, Bob.
All right.
Turn the phone over to me.
All right, let's have Jody back.
Okay. We're interested in doing a three-way.
Well, wait, we want to talk to Jody. Where'd she go?
She's right here. Hold on.
All right.
Hello.
Hi, Jody.
Hello.
Hi.
What's up?
What's the question there?
They got my attention. I heard three-way.
No, well, it's one of my fantasies. I want to do a three-way with my husband and another man. And we were going to go on a...
Now, that's rare, because I would think that if most of the three-way fantasies are usually it's instigated by the husband and it involves another woman.
Yep, but I bet there's a negotiation going underway here.
No.
This may, in fact, be her fantasy, provided that then they can turn around and do it with two women.
No.
Listen, Jody, this is totally unprofessional, but I'd like to have your address.
My address?
What's
you don't
that?
Know one, you don't know the part that I want. I don't want the guy for myself. It's for my husband.
He's gay?
Oh.
No, it's not. He's, like, curious.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So?
Curious about why you don't know he's gay? That's basically what that means.
Yeah, well...
How old is
he? For over 7 years.
How old is he?
Huh?
How old is he?
He's 33.
He's not curious.
Yeah, 33-year-old guy's curious. Yeah. This guy.
You know, a 15, 16-year-old kid could be curious.
Right.
33-year-old guy basically...
Is longing.
Basically, unless he's been incarcerated for a while. I think that the idea of having a gay relationship is not uncommon, but I also believe that it's not something that happens overnight. It's something that it's been in your thoughts since, you know, since you first became a sexual creature.
Yeah, he actually, when he was in his early teens, he experimented.
Men don't experiment.
He did stuff. What he told me.
Yeah. Is he pushing for this?
He's all for it.
Why did you say it's one of your fantasies?
I want him to penetrate me and then have the guy penetrate him.
But if he's the one pushing this, why is it your fantasy?
I don't think it is.
Giving him a lot of pleasure. So.
This is not your fantasy, Judge.
Well, even if it is, do you guys have kids?
Yeah, we have one.
Yeah,
all right. You forget it.
No,
don't do this.
Unacceptable.
Don't do it. Jody, mark my words. You will regret this.
Yeah, that was my other question. He's bipolar. Oh. I can see him totally flipping it around.
You will regret this, especially when he's wearing your clothing.
Yeah, he's
her new boyfriend.
Oh, boy.
Just out of joking, though.
This is a slippery slope here, Jody.
Yeah, Jody,
you've got to contain him a little bit.
Yeah, if he's been trying to manage a gay impulse, and if that's really who he is homosexual.
Don't encourage it.
Well,
I don't think you can stop it anyways. It's going
to
happen.
But he may be able to contain it long enough, or at least keep it sort of in balance until his kid gets out to college.
Right.
And then he can go live his life. But, you know, once you have a kid, I don't know, just don't disrupt the family unit if you can possibly help it. And people would disagree and say, oh, he's living a lie. You know what? It's okay.
Everyone
should live a lie.
I'm living a lie right now, to tell you the truth. I have the strongest impulse to shoot my neighbor's dog.
Yeah, but you're not doing it.
But I'm not doing it, you know, because first of all, you know, I don't want to go to jail,
right,
or I don't want to come out on a celebrity justice.
Yeah. I was on that already.
I think it's okay. You know what? I think it's okay to have fantasies, but I think that sometimes when these fantasies come to life, they'll never measure up to how you expected them to be.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, I'll tell you a little personal story here. I once slept with a very famous, very sexy starlet, who I won't mention for obvious reasons. And you know what?
I wish I would have never had done that, because the fantasy of sleeping with her was a lot better than the actuality of having slept with her. Okay. She turned out to be a lousy lay.
Now we have to know who this was.
We'll find out during the
conversation. All right, sure. Let's get a break then.
All right. Paul Rodriguez, our guest tonight, going to be at the amphitheater.
We'll find out who he is.
This Saturday.
You're gay.
We'll be back after this. Hey, buddy, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Paul Rodriguez is our guest tonight. Universal Amphitheater this Saturday. I want to tell everyone to watch Crank Yankers, too, which I always forget about, our Comedy Central show.
A funny show.
Well, Paul, you can do a voice on it. We'll make a puppet look just like you if you want.
I think so. I'd like to be, I'd like to do a Jose Feliciano.
A blind puppet. Chico,
don't be discouraged.
The man, he ain't so hard to understand. Yeah, except for you are, Jose. We can't understand what you're saying. I was sitting around and I was just thinking, I was watching the news and we were having Iraq destroy more of their weapons. And I thought, I kind of like the fact that we tell them to destroy. Like, yeah, see these missiles you guys made? We're going to need you to destroy them, as opposed to usually we destroy them. And I thought, it's sort of like when the bully gets hold of you on the playground and he says,
hit yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I could kick your ass. I'd rather watch you punch yourself. So,
you know,
hit yourself, yeah.
I was watching
it. It's extra humiliating, isn't it? Destroy your own stuff.
I was watching the news, and they last week, I think, they made a big announcement saying that that Korea, North Korea, had developed a missile that could actually reach the West Coast.
Right.
And my sister was there with me, and she goes, that's a, whole bunch of crap. She says, I have a Hyundai. That thing can't reach the freeway. I started to laugh because it's not true. She goes, you know, if these missiles were made by Japan, we should worry because the Japanese make quality stuff.
Right.
But the Koreans, their technology is suspect. I don't think they can reach
it. Interesting you bring up these nationalistic issues. Adam and I decided we're not buying anything French or German anymore.
Yeah.
Last night, yeah.
Well, you know, the Mexicans, we've had a beef with the French for a long time. You know, as a matter of fact, the Cinco de Mayo was actually a battle against the French.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I say they were a-holes then, and they're a-holes now. You got to admit that the French are consistent.
Well, I was yapping at Drew last night on our nightly telephone call on the way out of here, which was the Germans have sort of, they're indignant about this whole thing. You know, we have not, well, I'm saying, I said to Drew, since when do we have to go to Germany for advice on what to do morally when it comes to a war, you know? I mean,
they really do have, you know,
are they the yardstick?
Yeah, they're pretty much the acid test, you know?
They're the man on the mountain. Let's seek Germany sage-like advice on world matters.
You know, when it comes
to
peace and morality, you can't go wrong with Germany.
No, these people have a proven track record.
Springtime for Hitler.
I mean, Germany drew the entire world into a war.
Twice.
And then about 19, 20 years later, drew the entire world into a war again. And then the interesting spin on the second one is they were trying to exterminate a whole group of people in the middle of the war. And
now, we have to come and interfere.
Right. I was saying to Drew, I was saying that Germany has about another 200 to 300 years before they get a vote on anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that they're in the penalty box.
Yes! I mean, it's like you take out one Jew, you're in the penalty box for 3 minutes.
There you go.
You high stick a rabbi, now it's tennis. You take out 6 million Jews,
you're
the man.
You're in the dog pound for a long time.
Yeah, you know how they do that stuff? Like once in a while they do that thing where they go, they take the criminal and they go, you're going to get 1 year for every citizen you killed in that truck bombing, and you killed 10,000 citizens, so you're getting 10,000
years. I think they'll have a vote in the next ice age. Right around then, they should be,
right.
You know, they should be allowed to vote. You know, it's so weird because when I was in the Air Force, I was stationed in Germany, and there was such a weird society. I think that countries, there are some countries and some nationalities that are just void of humor. You know, not a lot of comedy clubs in Germany. You know, comedy's not a big part of their forte. And, you know, it's ironic that Germany's been involved in two world wars, like you said, and Japan also. Not a lot of stand-up comedy in that country. I think there's a direct correlation between countries who have humor, who laughing is encouraged, and the fact that they go to war quite a bit, you know?
Right.
Laughing time is over.
Schwarzenegger's like their greatest comedic export. Schwarzenegger and Artie Johnson when he was very interesting and then fall over on his tricycle.
One call.
All right. I just say, really? We gotta ask.
You gotta invite me back next time you go to your dentist. You're a great guy, right?
Yeah, without all these drugs on board, he's an asshole.
I'm just saying, we got the pussy country whose ass we saved. We got the other country who was looking for the final solution about 50 years ago. And we got to ask their permission.
Yeah.
Thanks, pals.
Kerry,
what do you guys think? Is it okay?
Kerry, 27.
I mean, Germany, we really respect your opinion. We really want to know.
Kerry?
Hey, you guys.
Hey.
What's up?
You know, I just want to tell you something real quick before I get started. I've been listening to you guys ever since I was, like, a kid in high school and everything. You guys rock, okay?
Where are we listening?
I'm in Florida right now, but that was up in Philly. I was in Philly. Okay. I, too, joined the Air Force. I was your dentist, Paul.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I'm just kidding. I was your dentist.
Oh, my goodness. Because I was in the Air Force, and I did go to, you know, I did have my teeth worked on there. I figured,
I know.
And let me tell you, this Dr. Mengele worked on me. He was not very good.
Well, I got to talk after this call. I'm going to ask Paul about his military experience. But go ahead.
You better write it down. You're going to forget.
Yeah, they give you 2 Motrin for everything.
All right, Kerry, what's up?
I'll get started. I'm sorry.
Unfortunately, we're kind of crushed for time.
Kerry, let's get to your sexual needs.
No. It's not really a sexual thing. Last Monday, I witnessed a guy. He shot himself in the stomach. He had like a whole sucking chest wound and everything. and he died. I performed CPR on him. I was a combat arms instructor in the Air Force, so I know, you know, what you're supposed to do if somebody gets shot.
Yeah.
And he, like, totally died in my arms. And before you ask, I have had a lot of abuse in the past, and I did, you know, go to the shrink for about 3 years, and I got it worked on.
Did he shoot? He shot himself intentionally?
You know, personally, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, because it was in his stomach. He was shooting a 40 Glock, and then when he tried to pull it back to clear it out, I think he shot himself accidentally.
Oh, my goodness.
I actually saw this on 60 Minutes. I don't know if you guys ever remember. Morty Safer was doing a story on gang members in East Los Angeles, and this gang member shot himself in the stomach accidentally. You know, if you're going to shoot yourself, the stomach isn't the...
Yeah, not where you go.
That's not where you go. Those are accidentally...
Kerry, hang on a second, okay? We're going to go back to you in a minute.
Yeah, bad.
I'm sorry, Paul.
But ironically enough, you know, I too have had this experience. I had when I was in the
I'm gonna have you stop because I want to hear this, but we have to go to break right now.
Oh, cool.
The satellite won't wait for us.
All right, Paul Rodriguez is here. He's gonna tell us
war stories,
war stories,
yeah,
and more stories when we come back.
Buddy, Loveline, the man of dads, Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Paul Rodriguez is here.
In the house.
Comedian, veteran, American. Showing us his dog tags.
From Wayne Newton.
Thanks, Wayne. So, Paul was talking to us about being in the Air Force.
Yes, I was in the Air Force.
Having to resuscitate somebody?
No, somebody else.
This didn't happen. Actually, I used to go to a very rough part of town here in Los Angeles, in Compton. I went to Dominguez High School, and I remember I was in the 10th grade, and I'm walking to school, and this car drove by, and he shot into a crowd, and this guy got hit in the stomach. And I didn't know who he was, nothing, but I went up to him, you know, I took my T-shirt off, and I wrapped around, you know, like the lady was calling before, he too died in my arms.
Yeah. Wow.
And I was subpoenaed.
How old are you?
Oh, I must have been 16,
oh,
15, God. 16. I was subpoenaed to go to court, and the police officer treated me like I was the one involved. They kept saying, you know, you saw who did it. Man, I didn't see anything. I heard shots, and I saw this guy fall, and I was subpoenaed for many years, and ultimately I couldn't identify these guys. I mean, if I would have seen them, I would have identified them, but I didn't see nothing.
Was the guy a student?
Yeah, he was just a student. These guys just drove by, and they just shot into this crowd, and this unfortunate dude got shot in the stomach, and everybody ran, and I don't know why I didn't run. My father was really mad at me because he said, you know, don't get involved, you know, these people are going to come and shoot our house, you know, what's wrong with you? And I said, well, you know, Dad, if it would have been me shot in the stomach, you would have wanted somebody to, you know, I'm about to die, somebody should hold me there.
His dad, ironically, was like, but not you to help you, you idiot.
Yeah, well, you know, like this, the last caller said that, you know, somebody died in her arms. It's really a very sad and in a weird way a rewarding experience to know that, you know, you comfort him. This guy was delusional towards the end. He was talking to me in Spanish, and he was saying, you know, things like, you know, I guess some of his relatives, and he kept asking for someone named Jose Juan. Jose Juan, is that you? And at first I said, no, it's not me. You're going to be all right. Then after a while it dawned on me that, you know, this dude's about to die, man. If he wants you to be Jose Juan, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, I'm here with you. And he passed on.
Wow. And, I mean, that was before the ambulance got there or anything.
Yeah, he knew he was dead. And as you must know, Doc, you know, a stomach wound is a messy thing because... It wasn't a high caliber bullet. It didn't go through. It more or less just goes in and rattles around and tore all kinds of, I guess, vital organs. And it was just a flood. You know, you can't put a tourniquet or nothing. It's the worst place to get shot. I remember one of my favorite movies was Stacy Keach and the new Centurions, where he gets shot in the stomach, and it really is a, you know, no good place is a good place to get shot, but if you get shot in a limb or something, you can put a tourniquet or something.
Yeah.
When I was in the Air Force, they taught us first aid, so you know the basics, but for the stomach, there ain't a hell of a lot you can do.
What did you do when you were in the military? You went from high school to the military?
Yeah, I went from high school. I was a loadmaster in a C-130. I was stationed in Keflavik Air Base in Iceland, yeah.
Now, there's a load C-130 is a big transport plane.
Yeah, well, we used to fly for Military Airlift Command, MAC.
Does the Loadmaster check to make sure it's secure and balanced and how much payload's on the plane and that kind of stuff?
You're in charge of the weight. You actually you have to be an officer to fly a plane, but in a lot of ways, the Loadmaster is the ultimate. I mean, that plane doesn't take off unless we say it takes off because, you know, you have to make sure that it's you know, this is 30 years ago, Adam, but back then, you know, you have to make sure that we didn't have the fancy computers that they have now.
Right.
So you have to do it all. You have to be pretty good at math. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to get it together. And
well, it's you know, it's interesting and it's something I never ever get past. Like I understand people say that you know the 747 can hold 500 passengers, can hold X amount of fuel, and so on and so forth, and that's all fine. But when you see the M1 Abrams tank being loaded into the plane, and if anyone ever goes and sees a tank in real life and sees that it's not just a sort of armor plating, but that many parts of it are carved out of giant chunks of armor,
steel.
Like the turret is a big piece of steel.
Yeah, you're talking about 35, 40 tons.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about
40 tons.
You're talking about one of these tanks weighing about 25 SUVs.
Yeah,
it melted down into one thing the size of about a large SUV. You know, and we're going to take two of these things, and we're going to slide them into the belly of this plane, and then it's off to the wild blue yonder.
I actually got to fly this last time when I was in Afghanistan with Wayne Newton and Neil McCoy and a couple other country and western stars. I'm not really big on country western, but I guess they're pretty well known. The Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders. We flew in a C-117, which is the workhorse now, the refueler. And it's amazing these things that can take off the air. The biggest airplane the Air Force has is the C-5A Galaxy. And that sucker right there will carry several tanks and trucks and jeeps and troops. It's an amazing. You can't believe this thing takes off the ground.
They just open the rear up or the nose up, and it just starts driving them in.
I'll be watching you.
I just can't. I couldn't imagine. Like my fantasy was that you take one of these M1 tanks that weighs 40 tons, drive it into the plane. It would stay there for 1 second and just fall through the bottom.
Your fantasy?
Yeah. Well, not good fantasy, but I mean, this is
your
the way,
nightmare, I think it is.
This is what I would see happening. I mean, I can't imagine that they get airborne with this stuff. And then of course, thousands of pounds of fuel to refuel other planes.
It's tremendous. You know, I was involved in an aircraft accident, and I'm not really a good, you know, I don't fly happy, but we belly flopped in Iceland. And back in 1975, our hydraulics went out, and, you know, it was a nightmare because...
You landed without the gear down?
Right, or? Right. We belly flopped, yeah. And,
was the plane loaded up?
Well, actually, the airplane, the C-130 doesn't have the capabilities to dump fuel. So the hardest thing was that we circled for hours.
To use up the fuel.
Yeah, burn up fuel before we landed. Oh. And I remember... the major who was flying the plane, he says, "Pray to your gods, boys! Pray to your gods!" And it was like a Jewish guy, a couple of us Catholics, and a couple of Protestants, and man, you know, we're all praying to our God, you know, hoping that one of us has the right God.
Sure.
You know, to land.
So you guys went in with all the gear up? None of us in the lock position?
There's a compartment on the, you know, these planes were made in the 40s, you know.
Right.
There's a compartment where you can manually crank.
Right.
But at those altitudes, we just lost all our hydraulics. And in Iceland, it was, you know, after a certain altitude, it doesn't really matter because it's below zero.
Right.
And we couldn't get this thing open. So my biggest fear was I was 19 years old, and the biggest thing was for almost 2 hours, I kept saying to myself, "My God, I'm 19. I'm not going to get laid. I'm not going to eat Mexican food." All the things, the minutiae that you think about. But the main thing was getting laid somehow was really, really important.
Right,
you know, I was up there, and I was saying to myself, and you know, and for 2 hours, there's nobody on this plane that I want to lay or well, would let me lay them.
Not in hour one, but as we approach hour two, I think the standard shift is a little.
Yeah. By hour two, that major was looking really good, you know.
Wow. And so
let's heal some babies.
Shut up. So the plane just came down with no landing gear.
It's a turboprop, if you know anything about those planes. Yeah, it landed.
Slid on its belly?
You know, I still remember the major. His name was Alan Parker. And he was a tremendous guy, man. He belly flopped this sucker, and hey, I'm here, man. We lived.
Did they put any foam on the runway or anything like that? Could they do anything?
No, it's Iceland. It was pretty much naturally foamed already, if you will. Wow. We didn't have no fuel, so nothing could burn other than friction. And when we landed, it was quite a bump. So it's kind of like flying Southwest into Phoenix, you know?
Yeah. Or Nevada.
Las Vegas.
Yeah. Las Vegas in midday,
August.
Yeah, that's
the one I'm always on. All right.
Here we go. So back to Carrie.
Yeah.
So okay, so you heard all that, Carrie.
Yeah, I heard all that.
So you heard, guy got shot and died in your arms.
Right.
And now the question is?
Well, before I had, like, a lot of problems growing up, I was abused, blah, blah, blah. And I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder while I was in the Air Force.
From the early abuse. Yeah.
And then in December, I got discharged from the Air Force. I got retired because I have multiple sclerosis.
Uh-oh.
And, yeah, it sucks, but it's okay. And I feel I'm afraid of a lot of things. I'm not like, I don't think I have like a social anxiety disorder because like I'm a very talkative person. I go out, I'm an extrovert, you know. But I'm afraid, like my husband, he's a pilot and he's going to fly tomorrow. And I'm just like afraid his plane's going to crash.
So you're catastrophizing about everything.
Yes.
Everything's a catastrophe.
Well, because everything bad happens to me. You know what I mean?
Well. Seems like it.
That's your expectation. But that is obviously something sort of etched into your brain by these horrible experiences. They were indeed bad, but it doesn't mean that everything bad has to happen to you all the time.
Right? What kind of plane does your husband fly?
Well, no. He got his private pilot's license. He's just going flying tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
He's not for the Air Force.
Right? I thought you were connected to the Air Force.
Oh, no.
All right, so what do you do to get over this catastrophe thing?
In Carrie's case, though, she has a bona fide post-traumatic stress disorder. When you have that from early abuse, lots of things can re-evoke those sorts of mechanisms. It's a biology that sort of reopens. And, you know, what we normally do with people is sort of keep them grounded, keep them just in a very quiet place and keep them connected to reality. You're okay. This is reality. Your husband's fine. You know, don't get around any evocative kinds of material, and don't sort of sit by yourself and obsess. Stay with people that you can connect with, feel comfortable
with.
What
about watching TV and watching, you know, catastrophes on television?
Yeah, that's got to add to it, I'm
sure.
That
adds to it, or reading books that are evocative, that all sort of can re-trigger things. Rather, somebody you're intimate with, a friend, a close relationship, spend some time with them, help you sort of land, literally.
You know, Doc, what happened to me after this airplane mishap that I was in, turned out at the time it was the worst thing that you can imagine. The fear was tremendous and everything. But looking back at it, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to me because I swear to you, I'm fearless. I don't worry about it anymore.
As a result of that?
As a result of that, I figured it's never gonna, you know, I think I should be more concerned, but to the contrary, I feel like the odds of this happening again are, you know, certainly in my favor. And I figured that I should have died then. So all these years that I've had now, it's a bonus. I feel somehow like living on borrowed time, if you will.
People talk about that or feeling as they literally face their fears and overcome
exactly.
them.
Exactly. And I think after a while, whenever you're feeling any kinds of phobias and stuff, after a while you have to rely on the fact that you got to be fatalistic. You know, you can't. You know, if we all lived in the fear, I mean, let's face it, we live in Los Angeles, and you know, anything could happen—a drive-by, an earthquake, you know, terrorism, biochemical wars. I mean, you can drive yourself nuts worrying about the things that could happen. After a while, you got to say, "Look, man, if it's gonna happen to me, it's gonna happen to me." But in the meantime, I'm gonna live.
Or do what I'm gonna do: preemptive strike.
Take a bunch of Valium?
Yeah. Well, I knew you were going to say, they go, do what I do. Go see my dentist.
Why wait for the Grim Reaper? I'll be the Grim Reaper. All right. Mike?
Yeah.
You're 30?
Yep.
What's up?
Well, I kind of got in this situation where I started, you know, fooling around with my employees or my my helper's daughter.
Your helper's?
Yeah. I hired him on to help me out doing some construction work.
Uh-huh.
And started fooling around with his daughter. Well,
how old is she? Let's go there first.
At the time, she was 16.
Oof.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How old are you?
30.
30.
Mm-hmm. All right. Lucky bastard. I mean, you know, that's...
well, not really, no. I mean, it's really screwing with me now.
When you say helper, he was an apprentice or something?
No, I was helping.
I just hired him on to help me do my construction work.
Is this out in front of the Home Depot? I know. That's what I'm going to ask again. What do you mean, a helper? Was he an apprentice?
Basically, yeah.
All right.
He basically hires people who have fine-looking daughters.
Yeah.
Right. He has standards. Yeah.
What kind of construction work do you do?
Interior trimming.
Uh-huh.
Trim, get it? Trim. Interior. Sure.
Base and case?
Yeah, exactly.
You swing a lot of doors?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. You put a bevel on the butt side as well as the strike side of your doors?
That's it.
Thank you for getting Adam knows his carpentry. Jesus. He's the most famous carpenter.
But in the past, when he's mentioned, asked about even the width of doors, no one can answer that.
Well, Mike seems to. Mike, thickness of an interior door.
Excuse me?
Thickness of an interior door?
Inch and 3/8.
All right. Exterior door?
Inch and 5/8.
Inch and 3/4, buddy. Thank God you had a helper.
By 16.
Yeah, actually an eighth.
Yeah.
But that's all right. Now, how come no one knows?
But, I mean, yeah, it's not the construction thing I'm, you know, so much worried about.
I know, but I'm interested in that. That's the setback on the deadbolt. Exterior hinges, what size would those be?
Exterior hinges.
Yeah.
Four bolt.
Four?
Four screw.
Four. All right, 4-inch. What about interior?
Interior, they're a little smaller. It's like 3.5.
All right.
You guys are starting to sound like something out of the Discovery Channel.
Dodged a bullet there, son. All right, we can go on.
Adam can hang with you, Mike, in spite of the...
Hang with him. He didn't know what size an exterior door was. Height?
So, Mike,
height of a door?
Height of a door.
7 feet.
6'8".
Yeah.
6'8",
4'0". Okay, listen, Mike.
4'0", 8'0".
Yeah.
Mike, why is this...
3'0".
Aside from the obvious, 4-0. What is it about this that is, quote, screwing with you, unquote, now?
Well, I mean, it's been going on for, you know, like a year, year and a half now. And
so you've been sort of dating her?
Yeah.
Does she think you're her boyfriend?
That's
a yes.
Yes.
She's been thinking that.
Yeah. Right. She
and do you have another?
Then I got caught up in the whole...
We assume she's legal now. She's older now, right?
Oh, yeah. She's like 18 now.
And do you have another relationship or a wife or something?
18, no.
All right.
Were you her first?
Yeah.
And now you want out?
No. It's the whole thing that she's starting to experiment and, you know, do her own thing now.
Good.
What's that mean?
Which is good, yeah. Which is good. But now, you know,
what's experiment mean?
You date other guys?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Good.
So, you know, it's like now I'm stuck in limbo and...
Are you attached? I thought it was her problem. It seems like you're the one attached.
Well, yeah, it probably is now, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You're not in limbo. You've fallen in love with her. She's realized the bloom is off the rose a little bit. Let me set something
Why
up.
Why was he calling?
I want to know this width of interior doors. explain it to her. 5/8 exterior. Give me a break, buddy. Jesus Christ. So here's what happened. This little girl comes around and she's young, and you know, when you're 15 or 16, any guy who's 28, 30 years old
is
like a superhero to you.
Yeah.
And if he's a male and he's around, especially if he's your dad's boss and he's got his tool bags on.
I'm getting turned
on. It's happening. It's to both of us.
You know, the Stanley hammer hanging from the leather belt. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it's exciting. And so she's probably getting into this guy. So this guy throws her a bone, and they dance around for a couple of years. And now she realizes, well, she's 18, she's probably attractive. She realizes now, this guy's just some schlub carpenter who's hanging out with my loser dad. There's all sorts of other guys coming at her now from high school. Maybe she blossomed a little in this time. And she's starting to try to give the guy the shoe. Now poor Mike is sort of caught up in her.
Yeah.
Which is good.
So what do you want to do, Mike? What's the question?
Well, the whole thing is, I still want to be friends with her dad.
Does he know about it?
No.
Well, I don't think he should know, man. Because there's no.
No, there's. Yeah.
Well, so no dad's going to be happy about this.
All right, so she dumps you, and you go along with your.
Be friends with her dad.
Yeah, go ahead.
Forget about this whole thing.
Well, yeah.
But you're in love with her,
hard,
right?
You know, I go over to his house, you know, and I see this, you know, her, you know, prancing around, you know, getting all made up for her new boyfriend of the week.
All right, Mike, you're the grown-up here, buddy. Mike, stop
being a retard.
You're the grown-up here, for God's sakes. You're 30 years old. Go ahead and get somebody your own age.
You should put this on your memory album. This is something that happened. This experience is an enviable experience, but there's a lot of young Turks
he's got a sort of tendency to go young. But go get somebody your own age, have a real relationship, get on with your life. You're the adult, behave like it.
Well, if worse comes to worse, you could always go to Costa Rica on a
14-year-old.
Yeah, go to Costa Rica, get yourself a 14-year-old and go on a sexual holiday, or that or Thailand. I've heard Costa Rica's
that way?
Mike.
I've heard. I've not experienced.
How do you mortise your hinges? Use a chisel. You don't use a template right over the collar?
Sure, yeah.
No, you don't. You don't. Mike, you're not really. You're sort of half a carpenter, right?
Oh, no. I'm full carpenter.
Yeah, but you don't mortise out your hinges with a template and a router?
Oh, yeah. You got to use a template.
Okay, buddy. It's a little cryptic, this kid.
Hey, you know, you people out there in Radio Land, call us with your carpentry and sexual needs. There should be a blend there.
I got to get back into carpentry just to save the industry. I'm surprised at all the jackasses that call this show. I really don't know what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't that Bob Villa that just called us right now?
No, Bob Vila's, you know it's him because if you close your eyes, you picture a cigar store Indian talking. You know, like.
Bob Vila has a new show. It's an edgier show. It's called This Old Crack House. It's an inner city.
Bob. Oh, I could take over that industry, Drew. All right, where are we? We're taking a break.
Comedy carpentry.
What a dream!
Building a joke.
Mike's really like sort of. He's everything that's wrong with males, isn't he?
Yeah.
He first off, he's banging some underage chick for a while.
Yeah.
Probably just screwing around, using her for what he can use her for
until she was gone.
She starts blossoming, gets a little older, gets a mind of her own.
Insecurity creeps in.
Gets a little tired of sneaking around with him and starts dating other guys from school. And now it's like, I got to go over there and watch her getting dolled up for one of her new boys.
Yeah, that's what you got to do.
Please. All right, we'll take a little break. Yeah, Paul Rodriguez is here. When we come back, we're going to speak to Matthew, who was a tanker in the Marine Corps and drove the M1 Abrams.
And he's from Bakersfield.
And he says there's 72 tons. All right, after this. It's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew over there. Paul Rodriguez in studio tonight.
Dr. Dre.
Going to be at the Universal Amphitheater coming up this Saturday.
Get your tickets. I think I've sold 4 tickets. It's going to look very empty if nobody gets any tickets.
Well, you can. Where are you getting from, Ticketmaster? Let's see.
Actually, we're doing pretty good. We're going to have 6 other comics. It's going to be
really?
Kinda,
wow.
Yeah, the Latin Kings of Comedy Tour.
Huh.
We're going to be out there, and it's going to be pretty cool.
Nice.
Pablo Francisco going to be there?
Sí, ahí va a estar el Francisco de los Pablos.
He actually was my opening act for a long time. There's a lot of very talented Latino comics coming up. You know, when I started, basically it was Freddie Prinze, unfortunately, had taken his life. He was the closest thing to a Latino stand-up.
We strangely had a big discussion about him last night. Was that last night?
Yep, that was last
night. Our listeners don't know there was a Freddie Prinze.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
His son came to see me. I was working a comedy club in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He was 14 years old, little Freddie, and he was going to high school there. His mom was from there, and I had done an article where I said that Freddie Prinze was basically my hero, someone that I idolized and admired, and I never met him, of course. I was in the Air Force when he took his life, 1976. And the
club 77, we
looked it up last night.
77?
Yeah. That's right.
Adam, I'm
23.
Right around the corner, right? Anyways, he came to the club, and I said, well, listen, your dad was, I love your pop. He was a terrific guy. Here's my address. If I could ever do anything for you, you know, look me up. He turns 18. One day I get a phone call from this Freddie Prinze Jr., right? So I take him around to the comedy store to see Mitzi Shore. I take him down to the Laugh Factory, people that knew his dad. And, you know, we hung around for a while. And then next thing you know, he calls me. He goes, hey, Paul, I just got a movie, you know. I know what you did last summer, you know. And to make a long story short, he's become quite a heartthrob and a movie star, you know.
I know. Now he doesn't return Paul's calls, which is an interesting, ironic.
No, he's actually a good kid. I'm hoping that he'll let me sleep over, you know, because I got the hots for Buffy.
You guys go way back. Yeah, it just struck me that last night, I don't know why we got into it, but most our callers and listeners probably know him and didn't know anything about his famous dad. Matthew?
Yes.
You're 26.
Yes.
So do you drive a tank in the Marines?
I did. I'm out of the Marine Corps now. I spent 4 years down in 29 Palms.
29 Palms. There, you know, when Matthew was driving, there were 30.
Yeah, he ran over one of them.
He wasn't good.
And you're saying the M1's Abrams tank, 72 tons.
Yeah, 72 tons.
And they load that right onto those C-130s, whatever the hell they're doing. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, I
couldn't handle that. Like, when I get a fat guy who sits next to me on the plane, I get nervous that the plane's not going to get off the ground. I couldn't imagine a tank sitting next to a tank. I'd just be staring at it going, there's no way is this thing getting off the ground.
Five tanks lined up.
I know.
It's unbelievable.
Well, the thrust that a General Electric or a Rolls-Royce engine, a jet, puts out is just amazing, the power that these huge machines...
I know, it's just the idea that they fly that just really, I'll never get past that. Mm-hmm. All right, Matthew, are you retired now?
No, just I did 4 years and I got out now.
How'd you end up in Bakersfield?
Kinda, yeah, and you're right, Adam.
Bakersfield's a dump, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but I'm
not
saying,
Oildale. Oildale's pretty hot.
I'm saying you're retired and that you're out of the service now, right?
Yes, I am.
And now, what do you do? I mean, as far as you drove a tank in the service.
Yeah, there's no civilian equivalency.
Yeah, what do you do? What do you do as a civilian?
Yeah, I ran into that problem once I got out. I was kind of looking around, and I was like, "Okay, now what I do?" But I got a pretty good gig as a drugstore manager.
All right,
that's a natural. You know, you drive a tank, you go into drugs.
Sure, pharmaceuticals makes sense.
Actually, I would think might be able to get a job for like you know a bulldozer,
Caltrans.
Or something.
Yeah. I was I was talking to my dentist about why I needed to be in the heavyweight designation with the drugs. I need more drugs, and he took a beat and he looked at me and I said, Doc, I take all these drugs. You know, whenever I take one, it doesn't really seem to do anything for me, so I need the heavy stuff. And he goes, oftentimes when people have done a majority of drugs, they build up a resistance. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm supposed to be insulted at this point, but I'm going to let that one slide. Ashley?
Hello?
You're 17?
Yeah.
What's up?
I just had a question. I'm in a group home right now, and I was hanging out with some friends yesterday, and I don't smoke pot usually, but I was with some friends, and they were, like, in a car with, like, all the windows up and everything, and I didn't smoke with them, but they were doing it, and I was wondering if it would show up in a drug test.
No.
It won't?
No.
Oh, okay, because my friend told me that it would.
Yeah, the problem is you were smoking pot.
No, I wasn't, really.
Well, it could.
Why are you in the car with all the windows up?
Well, I was just sitting there because we drove down to the beach and they kind of just started smoking it.
I know, but
don't you just hate it when that happens? I know the other day I was in a car and everybody around me was using heroin and, you know, it's...
Oh, I was in a car the other day and a guy took an 8-ball of coke and put it on an M80 and he blew it off in the car. And everyone got a little Coke in their hair and in their eyes.
You know,
and
you
stuff.
Try to explain that to your employer,
yeah.
And they won't believe it.
And actually, the question is why you didn't roll the windows down.
I was sitting in the very back.
Right. Why didn't you roll the windows down?
Because there's no way to get a hit.
There's no windows in the back of the car?
It was an expedition, and there's no windows in the back of it. I was the only one sitting in the back.
Did you get high?
No.
All right, you'd probably be fine.
All right.
It's really unlikely to show up.
But, you know, next time
inhale.
Crack the door, yeah.
Okay.
All right, you're fine. How's the group home treating you?
It sucks.
You have to get tested every once in a while?
Well, I wasn't going to, but they heard about me being there. So they told me that I'm in some trouble for it.
Are you a recovering drug addict?
No. I used to smoke pot with my friends and stuff because... In one of the foster homes I was in, I used to do a lot of partying, but they made me, like, I kind of had to get out of it once I moved.
Yeah, so you
the 20th place I lived in.
Whoa, where are your parents?
20th?
Yeah.
Where are your parents?
My dad, about 3 years ago, he died. He was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And my mom, she was a big drug addict. I haven't seen her since I was three.
Mm. You know, it's so sad. Some people get dealt cards that really, in life, that really don't deserve. My heart goes out to you, Ash, and, I hope you can, you know, overcome this and, you know, be the proverbial rose that grows up in, you know, in the desert.
Thank you.
All right, Ashley, take care. And 20 places.
Yep.
Why 20?
Well, just problems that I had in some of them, and I was in a place called Orangewood. I was there about 8 times.
What kind of problems do you have?
Just like, I don't know, they're just like different stupid behavior problems. Like I've been having like anger management problems and stuff.
Well, you know, she euphemizes everything. I'm sorry, the patient, that Ashley patient, had the behavior issues and
you know,
acting out.
If anybody though, Doc, has any kind of right to be angry, you should have 20 homes.
Yeah, but listen, Ashley. So here's what we're all saying. You're 17 now.
Yeah.
You're going to be out soon. You're probably, when will you be in 18?
In August.
August. So you're probably be in only like 14 more homes before you actually turn 18 and are on the streets. Now, unfortunately, your dad's gone. Your mom's got problems. Unfortunately, you've had to take care of yourself your whole life. And then eventually, in a few months, you'll be 18. You'll be out on your own. And you'll just be with the rest of society. Who has to take care of themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're going to need to do a good job at that,
right? Be good to yourself and really contain some of these things that have been a problem on your own behalf.
Yeah.
And you know what? I believe that all these experiences that you've had probably will come in handy to you, you know, because
make a bong out of an apple.
Long career in comedy.
You will be in a situation where you can help a lot of people because you've been through.
Business. Possibly,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this is an interesting point, which is a lot of people that had it real hard growing up, they didn't get the support, they didn't get the love, maybe they got some abuse. But eventually, when you're 18 or 19, you go out of the house to work, you go out of the house to college, you then just join everybody else who's out of the house. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know you have this history, I know you have this baggage, I know you have this emotional stuff that you're taking with you. But just look around you, look at all the other young people that are out of the house, and just sort of treat it now as, all right, we've turned the page, we're all out of the house, and it's all up to us to lead our lives.
Yeah,
all right. Boy. Yeah, good times. Corey?
Yeah.
You're 26.
The world is your oyster.
That's right.
I mean,
right.
Because that's all the world is.
I know I was kidding when I said that, Anderson.
Corey?
Yeah, basically my question is for Paul. I was just wondering how he got started in comedy or any advice on how to get started in comedy?
Well, you know, I didn't really set out to be in show business. I got out of the Air Force. I was going to college, and I took a couple. I wanted to be a trial lawyer, actually, and I took a couple of acting classes. And my first audition, I got a movie. Sometimes I think if I wouldn't have gotten that movie, I wouldn't have. I did a movie called DC Cab.
Really?
Yeah, years ago. Just an audition, you know. And after that, I just realized that, you know, telling jokes and getting paid money and meeting a lot of interesting, vulnerable chicks was the way to go.
Well, now when you got out of the service, you did 4 years.
4 years and three reserve.
Three reserve.
Yeah.
You got out.
Yeah.
he was a loadmaster. Drew was known as the loadmaster in college.
Yeah, but that was for a totally different reason.
That's what I'm saying.
He was a loadmaster.
Bill had the silk jacket made up, I saw.
The loadmaster, yeah.
And so now...
The loadmaster.
So now you're going to what college?
Cal State Long Beach, the 49ers, Steven Spielberg.
You're going to... You know you got a bad sports team when you mention a director, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we were lousy. So, we never won at anything.
So you go, so now you're going to Cal State Long Beach.
Yeah.
You're still in the reserves.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You're doing your one weekend every month.
That's right. I was in the reserves, and we used to fight other countries' reservists. Yeah, we used to fight the North Vietnamese reservists at the time.
I love that. It's like the B team or the junior varsity
there you
team
go.
Going
yeah.
at it.
They never really killed each other; just insulted.
So now you take a couple of acting classes. You're not doing stand up at this point.
No, I'm not doing stand up. I took a couple of acting. I was a counselor said, "Listen, if you're going to be a trial lawyer, you should take some acting classes because that's really all a trial lawyer is. You act in front of 12 people. You try to convince them that your client, even though they got video of him shooting somebody at a convenience store, he's really not guilty, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, that's how I got into it. I did that, and part of the course for that, they took me down to the Comedy Store, and it really was the golden time at the Comedy Store at the time. In 1978, you could see David Letterman, Robin Williams, Steve Martin. You can see all these guys for $5. You can see like 6 or 7 guys who ultimately became huge stars.
So you saw that they became influences on you.
Yeah, I saw them, and then I found out that they were getting, you know, at the time, I think Mincy was paying $20 a night, you know.
Right.
I think, you know, this is almost 30-some years ago. Of course, she's increased that to $22 a night.
Right.
You know, she's really been generous.
And then, so you went out and you got DC Cab, which is pretty big, pretty big movie.
Bill Maher was in it.
Gary Busey.
Mr. T was the hot.
True. Who else? DC Cab. Come on, buddy.
Marsha Warfield, Max Gale.
True's going to jump in.
Adam Baldwin.
Yeah, so the point is you get this, you get bit by the bug.
Right.
This is pretty cool.
Right,
and
now
screw the law.
I actually got paid $15,000, which was a huge amount of money. I got paid $15,000 so I didn't have to have a part-time job at a shoe store that I was working at. So I went back to school. I'm studying, I'm reading, and the movie came out, and it was a big hit. And I remember being in class having people go, "Man, you look just like that guy in DC Cab." And I would go, "Yeah, that's me." And, of course, they didn't believe it. They go, you look right. like that guy. So I didn't pay them no mind. And I was in class when I had this guy come over there and take me out of a sociology class I was taking. And he said, are you Paul Rodriguez, the guy in DC Cab? I said, yeah. He says, "I want to be your agent." He goes, "There's a part in a movie with Kevin Bacon that they're looking for a guy just like you. You know, I can get you an audition." And the movie was Quicksilver. And I said, "Well, you know, thank you very much." I said, "But I just did that for the money, for the experience, and I'm going to go on to finish my school here." And then the guy said the magic words. He says, "You know, if you get this part, they'll pay you $250,000." And I went, "What? $250,000? My God, you know.
Did you get the part? I didn't see that movie.
Nobody did. I got the part. I'm 1 degree from separation. It was Jamie Gertz.
This is our 3 degrees of separation.
Wow. Yeah. We know Paul Rodriguez.
Jamie Gertz and Louis Anderson was in it, and it was called Quicksilver.
Mr. T again. Yeah, it was a bike messenger service in New York.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We did it in New York and San Francisco. Had a great time.
Corey.
Yeah.
So there you go.
You got to be a loadmaster.
Yeah.
And they will not want to get into.
Listen. If you want to do, you want to break into stand up, right?
Yeah.
You got to put together an act. You just got to start doing open mics.
Yeah.
Around
go to the
town.
Laugh Factory Comedy Store.
Well, he's in Michigan, but just go around, open, get like the.
Corey, I'm gonna give you the best advice ever. Go to any karaoke bar, and instead of singing, tell jokes.
Hmm. Right. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800. Oh, forget about that. Paul Rodriguez is our guest tonight. Paul is...
I have been a big fan of the show, and I'm glad to be on it, man.
Really?
Yeah, man. I've called in several times.
That was you?
Under a pseudonym as a young, gay, frustrated Latino man.
Oh, that you was remember? Paul, yeah.
I go by the nickname of Pepe.
Pepe, yes.
Does it sound familiar?
I remember some Pepe.
Yes, Dr. Drew.
Yes, yes. Yes, Paul can be found at the Universal Amphitheater this Saturday with the Kings.
The Latin Kings of Comedy.
The original Latin Kings of Comedy.
Yeah, as opposed to the fake Latin Kings.
Yeah, not the old school, not the senior Wentzes of the world. But
you know, we got that idea. Right. We got that idea from the Kings of Comedy. When I saw the Kings of Comedy, I said, you know, that's a little boastful and inclusive. Yeah. I mean, I said, you know, the Kings of Comedy, not taking anything away from Cedric and Bernie Mac and all that, but I said, you know, the Kings of Comedy, I said, let me get this right, is Richard Pryor not on the planet anymore?
Yeah, Slappy White.
Eddie Murphy, Slappy White.
Yeah, come on, Red Fox.
Red Fox. I actually got to meet and see him at the Hacienda in Las Vegas years ago, and... He was just, I mean, the man can talk about, his whole act consisted of some 600 vagina jokes.
I heard just a lot of really filthy.
Oh, man, he goes, God must be Mexican. Who else would put a taco next to a...
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Rick, who's 17. Rick?
Hey.
What's up?
I just thought that if you were scared of seeing a tank on an airplane, there's a Russian jet where they once drove a train right into the back of it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, you're talking about the Antonov.
Ooh. Yeah, that's what it was called.
Yep.
Paul knows the train. He knows this military transport.
The Antonov...
129, I think.
Yeah, the Antonov is the largest airplane that was constructed, but like most of the Russian technology... I wouldn't fly that sucker. They are just, it's just poorly built. They didn't have the materials.
Plus, here's the tragedy. When it crashes, you have a plane crash and a train wreck.
I never thought of that. Yeah,
so the plane crash is a train wreck.
Yeah.
All right, Rick. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for watching the Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk to Jamie, who's 32. Jamie?
How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good. Love you guys' show.
Thank you.
Adam, got a great... I'm a three-striker. I used to be in construction. I used to be a diesel mechanic, and now I'm a truck driver, so...
No. Oh. Wait. Four-strike, and he lives in Bakersfield.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
that's a slippery slope.
I'm a truck driver. I'm in Bakersfield right now. I live in Fresno.
Oh, all right.
Hey, my family's from Fresno.
3.5 strikes.
That's what I was going to
ask. Well, they're in Fresno when the cabbage harvest is ripe.
No, they move on.
Citrus, and then they go north for the garlic.
Actually, my mom lives in a little town called Visalia.
Oh, yeah.
I know that one. Visalia right there is the...
Well, my question for Paul was I used to work with a guy as a painter that... He said his wife was married his wife was your sister and they lived in Selma.
Yeah, my sister lives in Selma.
Well, I didn't know if the guy was lying to me or not.
My sister.
Well, listen, no offense, Paul, but they pick a bigger celebrity. Paul Rodriguez.
Hey, I'm huge in Visalia. In Selma, I'm huge.
He's on the cover of the phone book.
Yeah, I'm on the cover of the Penny Saver.
My question is for Drew. My wife, she's been on birth control for like 3 years now,
yeah.
And I've seen a decline in the sex.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm listening to you guys, and so I had her talk to her gynecologist. And basically saying, can we switch birth controls? And maybe that was the problem.
Yeah.
And the lady said that, no, that wasn't the problem, that birth control doesn't do it. Now, I've heard Drew said it before. I just want to reconfirm it.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. Again, it's different for different women, which component of the birth control pill is going to affect them.
Sure.
And some pills enhance sex drive. It doesn't have to be the pill that she's sort of tapering off with, but it sure can be.
Well, Doc, those pills are nothing but hormones, aren't they?
Absolutely. That's it.
Anything having to do with hormones, I mean, that's really where your sex drive comes from, right?
Well,
estrogen and progesterone are not like testosterone. Okay, testosterone is where man's sex drive comes from. Progesterone can cause testosterone-like effects, but in some women, progesterone sort of makes them irritable and shuts them down.
It gives them thick hair.
It's what causes them PMS. That's right, and hair. The estrogen just makes them receptive. It's a form of sexuality that men doesn't have. Women have receptivity as part of their sexual.
There are some men who are receptive.
when they're low on the progesterone, I like to supplement it with something called roofies.
I see.
It helps with the receptivity. Yeah. It's introducing another drug.
Jesse.
Jesse, you're 17.
Yeah.
You've been on hold for 122 minutes.
Yeah.
All right. So you found picture of boyfriend with other girl.
Yeah, and it said that, well, I live in Sacramento, and I'm up here visiting him in Washington. And while he was out with friends, I was going through his drawers and found this picture of him and this other girl. And it said their names, and it said 2 months pregnant.
And did she look pregnant?
No.
Mm-hmm. 2 months, you couldn't tell.
Right, but, well, and how old do you think the picture was?
I mean, it looks pretty recent. It looks like he was hiding it because there was only one picture. And
that'd be kind of weird.
Was it written on the back, 2 months pregnant?
Yeah.
Is he in college now?
No, he's 19, but...
Jesse, the quicker you realize that men were pigs, the quicker you'll be able to move on.
And you guys are already having a long-distance relationship?
Yeah.
Maybe sounds like this thing may be over with.
Well, I don't know. I think.
Well, I didn't know how to confront him about it. I mean,
well, I think you. I think
with
you
a 2x4.
Yeah, you tape the picture to a 2x4.
You just say, "Look, I found this. I was looking for a pencil. When your drawer found this,
I accidentally opened the drawer.
Right. I thought a pencil may be taped to the underside of your sock drawer, so I turned it over. Yeah, I think you're going to have to ask him, because if you just found a picture, that's one thing. The 2 month pregnant part is a little weird, although he could say it was a friend, but it did seem like he was hiding it.
But it does sound like this relationship is sort of on the ropes.
But here's the deal. Confront him, and if it sounds bad, move on.
Yeah.
Don't believe it.
Just jump to conclusions. That's my advice.
Right. We'll take a break. We'll be back. That's the show. Wow. I don't know if it was the drugs or the company of Paul Rodriguez, but the night really flew.
Let's say it was half Valium, half Rodriguez.
Paul, yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, went by fast, and that's always a good show because it's over. So I want to thank Paul Rodriguez for coming out here tonight. You were a delight, and I want to tell everyone to go check him out this Saturday at the Universal Amphitheater with
the original Latin Kings of Comedy.
And come back anytime you like, Paul.
Thanks, man. It was a blast.
So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo. Dearly.
Time flies when you're on Vicodin.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Wilkins Engel. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.